Welcome back to the deep dive. So today we're looking at something that it almost feels like magic.
But it's not.
No, it is hardcore mathematics. We're talking about how things grow.
And just to be clear, we're not talking about, you know, plants or biology here.
No, not at all.
We're talking about the abstract mathematical pattern. So imagine like the jagged edge of a burning piece of paper.
Okay.
Or the way a bacterial colony spreads, even something like Tetris, how the blocks stack up and create this rough, uneven surface.
Exactly. And it turns out there's a hidden order inside all that randomness. We're diving into what's called the Kardar-Parisi-Zhang Universality Class.
Or KPZ for short.
KPZ. But we're looking at one specific puzzle inside of that, something that's really bugged mathematicians for years. It's called the Airy-1 process.
It really has been a thorn in the side of the field, a very specific, very irritating thorn.
And to help us get at this, we are digging into a paper from Communications in Mathematical Physics, published in 2023. It's titled, On the Exponent Governing the Correlation Decay of the Airy-1 Process, by Basu, Busani, and Ferrari.
It's a heavy title, but the discovery is actually very, very elegant.
So our mission today is really to understand connection. I mean, if I look at one spot on this growing surface and then another spot, say, a foot away, are they connected?
Do they know about each other?
Right. And as you move them further apart, does that connection sort of fade away slowly, or does it just drop off a cliff?
That is the core question, the speed of the fade. And the answer tells us this really surprising story about geometry.
Geometry?
Yeah, specifically the difference between living in a flat world versus a curved world.
I love that. Okay, let's unpack this. We need to set the scene before we get to the solution. What exactly is this landscape we're in?
Right. So let's strip away the real world for a second. Mm-hmm. Imagine a simple one-dimensional line.
Okay.
Now, particles or blocks are just falling onto this line randomly. They stick and the pile grows up. This creates what we call a height function.
So x tx?
Exactly. It's just a measure of at position x at time t, how tall is the pile?
Okay. So I'm picturing a jagged skyline just getting taller over time.
That's a great mental image. Now, the paper uses a couple of specific models to study this. They talk about exponential last passage percolation.
MOT.
LPP, yeah. And also TASEP.
TASEP. That sounds like some kind of military operation.
It does.
Yeah.
It stands for Totally Asymmetric Simple Exclusion Process. But really, it's just a traffic model.
A traffic model.
Yeah. Imagine particles hopping along the line all in one direction. If the spot in front is empty, it hops. If it's blocked, it waits.
That sounds pretty simple.
It is simple. But here's the magic of the KPZ universality class. If you zoom out, that simple traffic jam, it creates the exact same mathematical patterns as the falling blocks or the fire or a coffee stain.
So the microscopic rules don't matter.
They don't matter. The macroscopic roughness is universal. That's the universality part.
It applies to everything.
Precisely. But here is where it gets really interesting. The way it grows depends completely on how you start. The initial conditions.
Okay.
And the paper focuses on two main flavors of this growth, determined by that initial shape.
Two flavors. Okay, break them down for me.
Flavor one is the Airy-2 process. This is what you get when you start with a curved shape. So think of a single seed.
Or like a droplet spreading out.
Exactly. A droplet spreading on a table. Everything grows outward from that one central point. It has a curved geometry.
So like a fan? Or spokes on a wheel?
That's perfect. The growth paths, we call them geodesics, they fan out just like that.
Okay, holding that image, the fan. So what's flavor two?
Flavor two is the one we're interested in, the Airy-1 process. This happens when you start with a flat limit shape.
So just a perfectly flat, infinite straight line, and everything starts growing at the same time.
Everywhere, simultaneously.
So Airy-2 is curved, Airy-1 is flat. That seems like such a subtle distinction. Why does it matter so much?
Well, for a long, long time, we knew a lot about the curved one, Airy-2. A mathematician named Harold Wyndham had solved a lot of that.
Okay, and what did we know?
We knew that in that curved case, the correlation between two points on the edge decays polynomially.
Polynomially, so slowly.
Relatively slowly, yeah. Specifically, it decays like duller to the minus 2. So if you double the distance, the connection gets weaker, but it definitely hangs on for a while.
And the intuition there is that fan shape you mentioned, right?
You nailed it.
Yeah.
Because all the growth paths, all the geodesics, come from that one single seed. They're forced to overlap near the beginning.
They share history.
They share a history. And that shared history means that even way out on the edge, point A and point B are still sort of related. They're like cousins.
Got it. Shared ancestor means a strong correlation. So that brings us to the flat one, Airy-1. Why was that such a mystery?
because the math is just uglier.
I appreciate the honesty. Sometimes math is just ugly.
It's true. I mean, for Airy 2, you have these beautiful algebraic identities, connections to something called the Panleve 2 equation.
Things you can solve.
Things you can manipulate, and an answer pops out.
Mm-hmm.
For Airy 1, those identities just don't exist. It was a completely open problem.
And the paper mentions that people actually tried to brute force this with computers.
Oh, this is one of my favorite parts of the story.
Yeah.
It really shows the limits of technology versus, you know, pure thought.
So what happened?
So they ran these numerical studies, I think using MATLAB. They simulated the flat growth models just to see how fast the correlation dropped.
And
the data was baffling. It showed the decay was fast. Really, really fast.
Yeah.
Faster than exponential.
Right.
But it was so fast that it dropped below the machine's precision.
Wait, what does that mean, machine precision?
So you know how computers store numbers with a fixed amount of memory?
Mm-hmm.
Standard math gives you, what, maybe 15 or 16 digits of precision?
Mm-hmm.
If a number gets smaller than that, like 0.20 zeros, then the computer just, it gives up. It rounds down and calls it zero.
So the connection became so tiny so quickly that the computer just couldn't see it anymore.
Exactly. It vanished into the digital noise. So they knew it was super fast, but they couldn't pin down the exact speed. It was a mathematical blind spot.
That is wild. It's like trying to time a jet, but it flies past so fast your stopwatch doesn't even have time to click.
That is a great analogy. So where the computers failed, Basu, Busani, and Ferrari decided they had to prove it rigorously.
No more simulations.
No more simulations from first principles.
So what's the verdict? What did they find?
Are you ready for the term?
Hit me.
Super exponential decay.
Super exponential. That sounds intense.
It is. The main result, it's theorem 1.1 in their paper, proves that the covariance, that connection between two points separated by a distance, dollarite, it decays as the power of -4/3 dollar cubed.
Tap to the power of negative dollar cubed.
Yes. And that cubed part, that's the kicker.
Okay, let's just process that. Normal exponential decay would be like an azaler to the minus dollar. That's already fast.
Very fast.
But dollar to the minus dollar.
It's devastatingly fast.
Yeah.
I mean, if polynomial decay is a gentle hill and exponential decay is a steep slide, super exponential decay is a cliff edge.
As soon as you move the points apart, the connection is just gone.
Obliterated.
Mm-hmm.
It confirms exactly why the computers failed.
Yeah.
The numbers get infinitesimally small almost instantly.
Okay, so we have the what? When is dollar minus cubed? Now I need the why. Why does being flat make the connection die so much faster than being curved?
It all comes back to those growth paths I mentioned. The geodesics.
The paths of maximum weight, you said. The history of a point.
The history of a point, exactly. If you look at a point on the top of the pile and trace back how it got there, which random blocks created it, you're tracing its geodesic.
Right. So in the curved model, the fan model, they all go back to the center. They tangle up.
Right. We call that point-to-point geometry. They are forced to overlap. But in the flat Airy 1 model, we're dealing with point-to-line geometry.
Meaning the path can start anywhere on that infinite flat line at the bottom.
Exactly. And the most efficient path wants to go pretty much straight down to the line. So
okay.
If you take point A and point B, which are separated by a distance d, their histories, their geodesics, go almost straight down parallel to each other.
I see it. They aren't forced to converge on a single seed?
Precisely. They're like two trees growing next to each other in a forest. They just go straight up. Unless something really crazy happens, their roots and branches, they don't tangle.
They have disjoint histories.
And if they have disjoint histories,
then they're built from different random events, different randomness.
Which means zero correlation.
So for them to be correlated at all, these parallel paths would have to, what, accidentally swerve and hit each other?
Exactly. And that swerve is, it's energetically expensive. It requires a massive, super rare fluctuation in the randomness.
And the paper proves that probability.
The paper proves that the probability of these parallel paths straying far enough to actually touch is exactly what gives us that dollar cubed exponent.
That makes so much sense. The correlation is just a measure of the freak accident chance that these paths cross.
You got it. That dollar cubed is basically a measure of how incredibly unlikely it is for parallel lines to meet.
So they have this beautiful intuition, but proving it rigorously sounds like a nightmare. The paper says they used two totally different strategies for the upper and lower bounds.
They did. It's a classic mathematical pincer movement. You prove the value can be no higher than X.
And no lower than X.
So it must be X.
Let's talk about the upper bound first. That's the geometric approach, right?
Yes. And this one relies heavily on that last passage percolation model, the LPP.
The grid of random numbers.
Yeah, you're walking from the bottom to the top, trying to collect the highest possible score. The path you take to do that, that's the geodesic.
And the authors looked at transversal fluctuations.
Which is just a fancy way of saying,
mm-hmm.
how much does the best path wiggle from side to side?
And we already established that in the flat model, they naturally want to run parallel.
Right. So for the upper bound, they use this logic called the ordering of geodesics. Mm. They basically say, look, if point A and point B are far apart, their best paths to the bottom almost certainly never touch.
If the intersection is an empty set,
then they depend on completely separate sets of random numbers. And therefore, they have to be independent.
So they just have to calculate the odds of them actually touching.
That's essentially it. They proved that the probability of a wiggle big enough to bridge that gap is astronomically low, and it's specifically related to that dollar cubed term. It's a purely geometric argument about paths staying in their lanes.
Okay, that sets the ceiling. Correlation can't be any higher than that rare wiggle probability. Now, what about the lower bound, the floor?
No, and this is what makes the paper so impressive. For the lower bound, they had to completely abandon the pictures and go into hard analysis.
With something called Hufting's covariance formula?
Right, which is just a way to write covariance as an integral. But to make it work, they needed a crucial probabilistic tool, the FKG inequality.
FKG, what is that?
Fortuyn, Castellan, and Ginibre. But the name isn't as important as the concept. It's a tool that lets you show that certain things are positively correlated.
Meaning if one thing goes up, the other tends to go up.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
In these growth models, if you add more stuff to the pile, everything generally gets higher. The system is monotone.
Okay.
And because of that, the FKG inequality tells us the correlation is always positive, or at least non-negative.
Why is that so important for the math?
Because if you know the thing you're integrating is always positive, you don't have to integrate over the whole infinite universe.
Ah, it's a shortcut.
It's a huge shortcut. You can just restrict your integral to a small, compact set where most of the probability lives.
So you just sum the important part, and since everything else is positive, you know the real answer has to be at least that big.
That's it. It simplifies the problem enough that they could attack it. But even then, they had to use a very powerful technique called the steepest descent method.
Steepest descent? Is that like finding the quickest way down a mountain?
In a way, yeah. They're dealing with these really nasty, complex integrals, things involving Fredholm determinants. Steepest descent is a method to find the leading behavior of that integral by deforming the path of integration through a saddle point.
Finding the path of least resistance through the calculus mountain range.
A perfect way to put it. And when they did that, this purely analytic method gave them the matching lower bound.
So if the ceiling is lower cubed and the floor is dollar cubed,
then the answer must be cubed. They pinned it down from both sides.
That is just so satisfying. It's amazing that they used geometry for one side and pure calculus for the other, and they met right in the middle.
It really highlights the strength of the author's collaboration.
Mm-hmm.
You need deep probabilistic intuition for the geodesic argument, and you need serious analytic chops for the Fredholm determinants.
So let's zoom out. We have this super exponential decay. What does this actually tell us about the world, or at least the mathematical world?
I think it tells us something really profound about memory and origin.
How so?
Well, think about the two models again. ARI-2, the curved one. It starts from a single point.
The single seed.
Right. And as it grows, that single origin point influences everything forever. The system has a long memory. The geodesics are a tangled family tree, all going back to one ancestor.
Okay. And ARI-1.
ARI-1 starts from a flat line. A democracy of starting points, you could say.
I like that.
As it grows, the paths run parallel. They don't talk to each other. They forge their own futures independently.
So the shape of the beginning determines the relationship of the future.
That's a beautiful way to put it, yes. The flat initial condition essentially wipes out any long-range correlation because there's no geometric reason for distant points to interact.
They're causally disconnected in a way.
In a very real way, they are. And remember, this isn't just about this one math problem. This is a universality class.
Right. So even though they proved it using LPP and TACEP,
the result applies to the whole class. So if you could set up a perfectly flat burning front on a piece of paper, or a perfectly flat bacterial colony, the fluctuations at distant points should decouple incredibly fast.
Super exponentially fast.
Yes. It's a fundamental property of flatness. in this kind of random growth.
It's interesting to think about that in the context of the computer simulation failing again.
How do you mean?
Well, we think of computers as these all-knowing calculation beasts, but here the math was effectively too pure for the machine. The relationship was so faint, so delicate, that the digital world, with its rounding errors, just couldn't capture it.
That's a great point. It's a win for the human mind, really. The computer saw zero. The mathematician saw a very specific, very beautiful curve that just happened to be hugging zero very, very tightly.
It took pure mathematics to see what the computer couldn't.
Absolutely. Humans, one. Computers, zero. At least for this round.
We'll take the win. So we've solved the mystery of the Airy 1 process. The gap is filled. 80 to the minus 4/3 dollar cubed. A win for geometry and a win for analysis.
And a win for anyone who likes their universe to have tidy rules.
Before we go, I want to leave everyone with that image you mentioned earlier.
The geodesic forest.
Yeah. Let's visualize that one more time.
Okay, so in the curved model, the Airy 2, imagine a dense thicket of vines all sprouting from one single root, twisting over and under each other. That's why everything is connected.
Tangled.
Very tangled. But in the flat model, imagine a forest of tall, straight pines.
Growing row by row.
Exactly. They stand next to each other, row after row, all reaching for the sky. They're part of the same forest. They experience the same weather, but they don't touch. They stand alone.
That's a really peaceful image to end on. A forest of independent paths.
It is. And it just reminds us that sometimes, if you want to understand how two things relate today, you have to look at the shape of where they started.
I'm going to be looking for super exponential decay in my own life now, or at least trying not to cross my own geodesics.
Good luck with that.
Thanks for listening to The Deep Dive. We'll catch you on the next one.
Bye.